You found the right frequency. It's gentle on my mind, an easy listening experience.
Remain in the rhythm of the newborn day. You know, sometime you're bound to leave her, but for now you're gonna stay in the year of the cat. Year of the cat.
Al Stewart, Time Passages. Welcome to Gentle on My Mind, an easy listening experience on the Mighty Mellow DJ Fred. We're going to do a set called Sunshine Days.
Thank you. small cafe I met her, when she turned and smiled at me, I knew I had to stay. As the time went by and the winter sky grew darker, it was hard to leave her there when I heard her say,
an occasional feature here on Gentle on My Mind, the Sunshine Days set. That was a band called Crazy Paving, released back in 1970, a tune called Anytime Sunshine, and before that, a tune that we all know and love.
Exploring Science and the Sea. When you walk on a tattered carpet or a stained-up rug, you don't usually worry about it lunging up and biting you. Unless, that is, you happen to be walking through shallow coastal waters around Indonesia or parts of Australia. In those areas, the carpet just might give you a nasty shock. These carpets are sharks, known as wobbegongs. They have wide, flat bodies. Most of them are colored in shades of brown, speckled with white spots or circles. And they have tassels around their heads. In fact, that's where they got their name. Wobbegong is an Aboriginal word that means shaggy beard. The sharks spend much of their time flattened against the seafloor, a perfect carpet-like disguise. There are about a dozen species of wobbegongs. Most of them grow up to a few feet in length. The biggest species tops out at about 9 feet. Perhaps the most elaborate-looking species is the tasseled wobbegong. The appendages around its head are especially complex. They have multiple branches, so they look like small trees. Wobbegongs eat bottom dwellers, lobsters, crabs, some fish, and even other sharks, including their own kind. Females incubate their eggs inside their own bodies, then give birth to about 20 pups at a time. When they're born, the kiddos are hungry. They sometimes eat unhatched eggs, or their hatched brothers and sisters. The newborns then tend to scatter quickly, in part so they don't get eaten by mom, allowing them to carpet new patches of the ocean floor. Science in the Sea is a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute at Port Aransas. I'm Holly Brawley.
This is Gentle on My Mind, an easy listening experience. Tune in, turn on to the Mighty Mellow.
Thank you.
Dave Pell with Holiday for Strings. Before that, the Gary Pacific Orchestra and Soft Wind. We started that set off with Robin Jones and his quintet, and a tune called Liftoff. This is the Mighty Mellow DJ Fred. You're listening to Gentle on My Mind, an easy listening experience. And to help us connect with quiet moments and the natural world, occasionally we will be hearing episodes from Laura Erickson's For the Birds. Here's Laura Erickson.
Just about every child wonders at some point how other species and even other humans perceive colors. Do a blue sky and white clouds look the same to everyone who isn't colorblind? Sure, we humans all have pretty much the same eye structure, but in the same way that a joke could be hilarious to one person but fall flat to an identical twin, maybe colors look different to different people too. I was pretty sure I had a good handle on color. I've always been able to appreciate the different shades of red in a scarlet tanager, northern cardinal, and ruby-throated hummingbird, and I love the lovely tropical green of a chestnut-sided warbler in autumn and the subtle shades of pinks and purples in a common grackle in full sunlight. But now that I've had one of my cataracts removed, I'm discovering that the colors I see are different through that eye with its crystal clear lens than through the eye still obscured with the cataract. I'll be getting the second eye done on Wednesday, but during this interim period, I can actually use the magic of Photoshop to make two copies of the same photo and use a color slider to show how the eye with the cataract sees the same thing. Meanwhile, last week the British Ecological Society published a paper in Methods in Ecology and Evolution titled Quantitative Color Pattern Analysis, a comprehensive framework for the analysis of color patterns in nature. We humans and many primates are trichromatic, meaning we have three kinds of cones in our retinas, sensitive to red, blue, and green hues. Most mammals, including dogs and cats, are dichromatic, with just blue and green sensing cones in their eyes. Arctic reindeer have a special cone that detects the UV light that lichen emit. Bees are trichromatic but also pick up UV light. Many insects, fish, reptiles, and birds have four kinds of cones, and the mantis shrimp can have up to 16 kinds. Color perception is important for such essential tasks as detecting prey animals and vegetation types, noticing predators, and signaling their own kind for competitive, mating, or flocking purposes. To better understand the function of color signals in nature, the researchers developed quantitative analytic frameworks to estimate how animal and plant color patterns appear against natural backgrounds as viewed by ecologically relevant species. The program they developed takes a photo of how we see something and adds brilliant colors to the areas outside our own visual spectrum. Of course, they're restricted to using colors within the wavelengths we can see, so it's just a visual representation to help our understanding, not at all the way animals actually see the world. Our imaginations really are limited to the colors within our own spectrum. The photos they produced are brilliantly wonderful, but the popular press picking up those photos are saying, quote, "This is how birds see the world," and quote, "This software shows you exactly how different animals view the world," when it isn't. We have no idea what colors look like outside our own visual range. So although this wonderful work is important and cool, it simply does not show how birds see the world. Until we humans can evolve retinas with more kinds of cone cells, the colors birds and other animals see will ever remain a mystery to us mere humans. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.
And we're back with Gentle on My Mind. I'm the Mighty Mellow, DJ Fred. It's time for the Mancini Moment.
Thank you.
Colors Dance by George Winston. And before that, of course, Henry Mancini with Happy Barefoot Boy. Well, you're listening to Gentle on My Mind, an easy listening experience. I'm the Mighty Mellow, DJ Fred.
If you're searching for a window to our environmental past, you might look no further than the ground beneath our feet, especially if there's clay there. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is The Pulse of the Planet.
Clays are records of environmental change. There are several different types of clays that form in the environment. And if we can associate the types of clay and the types of environments, we can make our way back into the geologic past. Then we can tell whether the environment was wet or dry, and perhaps what types of organisms were living in association with the clays at the time.
Paul Schroeder is a professor of geology at the University of Georgia.
Geologists use the clays as kind of a key to the past. If you were to look at a clay in a modern forming environment, let's say a desert or in a very wet tropical environment, those clays are distinctly different. And we can work our way back through the geologic record and use those clays as indicators of past environments. This is how geologists reconstruct the climates of the geologic past, by looking at the types of clay minerals that are preserved. What surprises us mostly is not so much how wet or how dry or how hot or how cold the Earth has been through geologic time. What surprises geologists is sometimes is how quickly those properties change on Earth. Sometimes the transition from one clay type to the next can be a little bit more abrupt than what we thought. And then that challenges us to then ask the question, what caused that condition to change so quickly?
A heads up that yours truly has written a novel. Want more information, check out our Facebook page. Pulse of the Planet is made possible in part by the Center for Earth and Environmental Nanotechnology and the National Science Foundation. I'm Jim Metzner.
And this is DJ Fred saying thank you for supporting non-commercial radio.
Just a silly phase I'm going through, and just because I call you up, don't get me wrong, don't think you got it made. I'm not in love,
so don't forget it. It's just a silly phase I'm going through. Just because I call you up, don't get me wrong, don't think you got it made. I'm not in love, I'm not in Thank you.
whiskey stain is lying there. So don't you ask me to give it back. I know you know it doesn't mean that much to me.
David Snell on the harp with Crab Apple Jam, and I'll bet you recognized the tune before that, an extended version of 10cc with I'm Not in Love.
Exploring Science in the Sea. The Pacific coast of South America is a bit like a medieval castle surrounded by a moat. The castle is the Andes Mountains, which hug the coast. And the moat is the Peru-Chile Trench, a gash in the ocean floor that's miles deep. Castle and moat were built by the motions of two of the plates that make up Earth's crust. The Nazca Plate, which makes up part of the floor of the Pacific Ocean, is sliding under the South American Plate, which makes up most of the continent. The Peru-Chile Trench marks the boundary between the two, the zone where the Nazca Plate disappears. The trench is about 3,700 miles long and averages about 40 miles wide. Its deepest spot, known as Richard's Deep, bottoms out at a depth of more than 5 miles. The motions of the two plates are a bit herky-jerky. As Nazca slides eastward at a couple of inches per year, it scrunches up the edge of South America, forming the Andes. It also scrunches up sediments in the trench, cementing them to the edge of the South American plate. The Nazca plate sometimes sticks a bit, then releases with a massive jolt. That creates powerful earthquakes. In fact, the strongest quake ever recorded in 1960 was centered along the Peru-Chile Trench. That quake caused massive damage in Chile. It also created a tsunami that raced across the Pacific Ocean. It killed hundreds in Chile and hundreds more elsewhere. Destruction caused by the continued building of South America's moat and castle. For the University of Texas Marine Science Institute at Port Aransas, I'm Holly Brawley.
And that's the easy listening experience for today. I'm the Mighty Mellow DJ Fred. Thank you for listening. Remember, be gentle with yourself, be gentle of spirit, and be gentle on your mind. Wishing you many blessings.